We are in the middle of Yoyels, Perek Aleph. We've gone to the Pesukim, we already did Pasuk. We went through the Pesukim, we're up to Pasuk K. But before we begin Pasuk K, we have just a few more little things that we want to finish up. And let's start with, we are in the middle of the Maimari Chazal. In the middle of the Maimari Chazal on page 212. Okay, we're up to just last Maimar Chazal. Okay, last Maimar Chazal. And then we're going to see the Mincha Gedolah and the Chaimah Sanach, and then we're going to go further. Page 202, Pasuk very, very bottom. Makas Arba, Arba Mine Arba, Henir 4 Mine Arba. Shanema Yeser HaGozom Ochel HaArba, V'Yeser HaArba Ochel HaYolok, HaYolek, V'Yeser HaYolek Ochel HaChasil. So this is a very obscure medrash, okay? Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer. Parsha Yutes, this is the medrash. You ever heard of this medrash? Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer.
Yeah.
You heard it?
I heard of it, yeah.
Okay, it's an obscure medrash. It's not your common medrash. And this medrash seems to go up against everything that we've learned until now. Over here it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought upon Klal Yisrael, on Klal Yisrael, who are the beloved children of Hashem, Bonim Atem Hashem Ulekechem, if Hashem brought upon Klal Yisrael four varieties of Arve, therefore we could imagine Al Achas, Kama V'Kama, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought on the Mitzrim, he brought upon them at least all four, for sure, all four, and maybe even more. In Kach, the last line, in Kach Hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Yisrael HaKetzef, Hashem brought in this anger, of four different types of varieties of yelek, of grasshoppers, Kal V'Choymer Al HaMitzrim. Now this goes up against everything that we've learned until now. We learned until now Rashi and Chumash. Pasuk, it's not a Rashi. Pasuk and Chumash says there was no such thing in the history of Egypt in Arba, such a type of Arba, and V'lo Yeh Kain. And it will never be so, below year in the future, there will never be something like this ever again in the history of the world. And Rashi quotes, oh, what about the parasha of Yoel? In Yoel it says that it was Arba, there were four different types of Arba in the last 4 years, and it was very severe. So Rashi ends, we learned this very few times, Rashi ends that there in the Mitzrayim it was only one min. It was one variety. One variety. And in the time of Yoel, it was four varieties. So such a type of Arba, such a type of situation where the produce of the earth is consumed through one variety of Arba, that never happened before and will never happen again. But this had happened to Klal Yisrael, it being that it was from four different types. So Rashi, if you learn Rashi at face value, you would assume that Rashi means that when you have too many cooks in the kitchen, what happens? It's not so good. The food's not so good. Everyone has their turf. We know that to be very, very true. You have an organization. I actually work very, very superficially for an organization. And they really have too many people in the kitchen. I can tell you that. There are too many people who are in charge. And there are a lot of fights, not fights, there are a lot of like, and everyone has to do their role. And there's no question about it, they are mindless, because no one can do everything, but I definitely see how it holds them back. You can clearly see how there are people in this, who have leadership roles in this, you don't have no idea what I'm talking about. It's a non-profit, but they do very good work. And I got drawn in to do just a little teeny thing for them once, and I was involved with some of them, and I still are. And you see, no, he can't do this because that's his job. Oh, but he's not doing it. He's not doing a good job. We can do it better. We can clearly do it better. No, you can't even talk to him. Don't chepa. Don't even go near him because you're just going to make things worse. So the end of this, it doesn't get done because everyone has their little role. When you have four different types of Arba that are in charge of destroying the world, the world's not going to get destroyed because there are too many cooks in the kitchen. They're going to interfere with each other, and then therefore nothing is going to happen. Very, very common type of situation. That's if we look at Rashi and Chumash.
Sometimes that's a good thing.
What?
No, but sometimes that's a good thing.
Jewish.
Yeah, right, right, really.
That would be if they all came at the same time, but if they come
okay,
in series,
but even so, since Rashi here told us, the Farshma told us, is that they was a team. Each one was meant to finish off with the last one left over. So you're right, they came at different times, different years, but still they were all part of a process. They all did work together. We learned that. Like Dal Malchus, saying each one comes to Mashma with the other one left off. So you look at Rashi at face value, you get the impression is that when there are more enemies, more invaders coming upon the land, to a degree, that is a mila. That is an advantage. The land will not be destroyed. Isn't that a very simplistic understanding of Rashi and Chumash?
Right.
In the time of Mitzrayim, there was only one Arba. And the Pasuk hammers down. There never was something so tragic, that's the impression, something so terrible, and there never will be something like this ever, ever again. But in Yoel there was. No, in Yoel there were four varieties. And here there was only one variety. So how does it answer the question?
Yeah.
The answer is, so seemingly, is that when there's only one, you're in control. You have... What?
The coordinate.
They also, in life, more often than not, there's no coordination. Everything is just, each one has their turf. And they conflict. They conflict with one another, and the confliction is an advantage to the victims. They're not going to suffer as much because they can't get their act together. What exactly they will do? Look what goes on in the wars in modern day. Iraq, Iran, there's a coalition, and the nations, they don't see eye to eye. They all come together, and the world says, what should we do? And this one says this, one says that. And the end is, because no one agrees on the pratim of what we want to do, the end is nothing happens. What?
Even within one...
With one country, there's no... So nothing happens. Politics.
It's very complicated to be coordinated between
exactly.
What does the Air Force do? What does the infantry do? What is it?
Excellent. In the United States itself, what's the
but
role of the Air Force?
There's a lot of efforts spent in coordinating.
That's what happened after 9/11. After 9/11, that was the big complaint, that the government is not coordinated, and there's no sharing of information, and everyone has their turf, and that's why there was a Khorban. That's why there was a 9/11, because there is no coordination between all the various branches of the military. Exactly. That's a very simplistic approach to understand the difference between what happened in Egypt and what happened in the time of Yoel. And that's really, and that's it. And then the Radak mentioned that we find in Sefer Tehillim that in the time of Mitzrayim, when David records what happened, he says there were three. It says David mentioned it was Yelek and Chasil. He does not mention the Gozam, but he does mention the Yelek and the Chasil. So the Radak says, don't ask me a kash from Sefer Tehillim. Those two additional minim of grasshoppers of Arba, they were minor. They did not play a major role in what happened to the land. But in the time of Yoel, each one of the four was significant. That's what we learned until now. But this obscure medrash turns everything upside down. He turns everything upside down and he says, if Klal Yisrael, who are the Yedidim of Hashem, suffered from four varieties of Arba, how much more so, la'achas, kama v'kama, do we have a right to assume that the Egyptians, who were the enemies of Hashem, how much more so do we have a right to assume that they suffered even more? They suffered all of these minim, kal v'chomer al ha-mitzrim. They suffered everything. But it doesn't say it in the pasuk. It's not a kasha. Not everything does say in the pasuk. But what is very difficult is, what does it mean then? There never was something like this, and there never will be something like this again. And that I do not have an answer for. I do not understand. I do not know how. Obviously, there has to be another interpretation of that pasuk that's not like Rashi. Rashi is telling us, is addressing the issue. What is the pasuk mean? Lo hoya v'lo yeh kein. And here it says, Kal v'chomer, how could it not be? If we, the beloved, suffered four, so certainly the Egyptians had to suffer the four plus a lot more. So maybe what it just means simply is that they did suffer from all four, but... And it was the worst. And I take it back. It's not such a difficult question. The only point, it changed our understanding, not like Rashi, the Egyptians, according to this Medrash, did indeed suffer from all of the varieties of locust. Not like Rashi. The difference is the degree of Churban. The land was completely obliterated with absolutely nothing left. Whereas in the time of Yoel, the land was obliterated, but there was something survived. There was at least some remnants of food that did survive from the four minim of Arbe.
So then in Mitzrayim, the Arbe referred to is a generic term.
Includes everything. Yeah. It's called everything. But this medrash is Rashi's perush and chumash cannot on a very simple level cannot work with this medrash. Rashi clearly says the difference is 1:4. You see a medrash that says no. In the time of Egypt, it was definitely 4.
Even says he saw this medrash.
What?
Correct.
Rashi the Lechoy did not have access to these all new medrashim which have been uncovered recently or whatever. You're right. Rashi, right? Whatever that means. And medrashim indeed conflict with one another. Okay.
What
so,
can you say
was that the Radak? So you want to say they were minor? No, but see, this medrash seems
to. The
Radak says there were three. Radak only focuses on what it says in Sefer Tehillim. And in Sefer Tehillim, it says there were three. And the Radak answers.
There's a one-shot deal in Torah.
Yes.
And then here, it's 1 year after the other.
It's one after the other. So is that worse?
I don't know if it's worse, but it's different.
It's different. One thing we know for sure, in Egypt, it was worse. That's all we know for sure, because the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says in Egypt it was worse. There was never anything like this in the history of the world. There never will be. Here we have Rashi, obvious kasha. We have, it's worse. Here there were four. There it was one.
Whether that the seems wants to learn, right, they were equal. According to what he also says in the tribe, one major player, the Arab, and the minor player. So Teron says the Arab.
Right, Teron says the Arab, and the other two were minor. But still, even though the other two were minor, still the devastation by the one, the Pasuk tells us, was much greater.
It was a one-shot deal, right? That's the second phase of that point out. One-shot deal, right? One shot, where here was 4 years straight.
So which is worse?
I don't know.
I would assume 4 years is worse, and four minimum is worse.
I'm not talking about the ferocity.
But the Pasuk says, the Pasuk...
I'm talking about... concept of a one-shot deal. This happened once. That's
it was 1 week. The whole Mach of Arbe took place in Chazal, say, 1 week. 7 days.
All the Machas,
7 days. This took place over 4 years. So which one is worse? 1 week or 4 years? I would assume 4 years. One min versus four minim. I would say four minim is worse. Everything seems to point...
But Rashi is not... In the Torah, Rashi is not comparing the ferocity and the major impact overall. Hashem said the Arba because of what other things, hell, Bara, this, that, you know, we destroy this, let's destroy that. But Rashi is not in that Rashi in the Torah. I don't recall that he's comparing the extent of damage done.
So let's see the exact words. Let's see the exact words of Rashi. The Barbanel?
Yeah. Oh. He mentions Yoel right away. This is the answer to the question. How could it save Yahron?
Let me first see Rashi. We'll look at this. Let me just see the Rashi.
Yeah, yeah,
let's
go
see
ahead.
Rashi.
Yeah, it's just one short paragraph.
Rashi in Parashas Vayera. Parashas Bo, not really. Parashas Bo. Right?
Yeah.
Parashas Bo. Bo El Paro. Put a base and an aleph. You know what the famous structure is? Base aleph into paro. Exchange the pay with the base, and exchange the aleph with the hay. And what do you get? You get arbe. Vayom Hashem el Moshe. Bo, take the letters bay and aleph, el, and insert it into paro. Now the letter pay is very similar to the letter base. In Aramaic, a pay turns into a base. For example,
they
barzel.
They can't pronounce That's how you can tell like it's Arab, an Arab and not a Jew. They say yes, they can't the same Arabic, word, Arabic, and then you know they're faking it. They're not really Jewish.
They don't have the
speech. Right? You can't say it.
How do you say in iron? Barzel. What's the targum for iron?
Parzala.
Parzala. Same letters, but you exchange the bay. You exchange the bay. The pay.
In other words, it's just the opposite. Arabic does not have the letter P.
Peace.
Aramaic.
Aramaic. There is a relationship between the letter P.
But they do.
Okay, whatever it is. But in halacha, there is a relationship between the letter P. Everybody say. Between the letter P and the letter base. For example, the classic example is what is the white, the inside of a letter P? A letter base. The inside of a P is a base. The white part. The one you make a letter base in the Sefer Torah. See in the printed edition of the letter P, you don't really see it so well. But in the Sefer Torah, Ksavashuris, the way you draw the letter pay is to make sure inside the letter pay there is a blank, a white letter base. Hey and Aleph are always interchanged. Okay, ki yikore kan sipar. How should it be spelled? It should be spelled with a hey, a mikra. How is it spelled in the Torah? With an Aleph. Yaakov says to his children, yikra eschem bi achadis hayam. Yikra should be spelled with a hay, and it's spelled with an aleph. So that's very common. The aleph and the hay are always interchanged. So Hashem says to Moshe, Bo el Paro. Take the letters Bay Aleph and insert these two letters into the word Paro. Where you're permitted to make substitutions. Where are you permitted to make a substitution in the letters of the aleph base? You can take the hay and put into an aleph, and you can take the letter pay, and you are permitted to make it into a letter base. And then what do you get? So we have an I. How does the ayin come into that? How does the ayin? Arba? The Arabic, you know, so how does it do? Something doesn't make sense then. Bo el paro, what am I saying over here? This is a famous vart. This is the thing that Svasemis says this. Am I missing something? 1 second. No, let's see over here.
Right.
1 second. Arbe. No, I'm making a mistake then. Maybe it's a gematria.
Arba,
no, arbe. Arbe. Arbe is spelled aleph.
Isn't it an anagram where the letters are mixed up? You have to rearrange the letters.
Yeah, but how does the ayin come into the picture? How does the ayin fit into the picture? You exchange the aleph with the, and that's what you do. That's what you do. You exchange the aleph. Arbe is spelled with a hey. What am I saying? Arbe is aleph, resh, beis, hey. You exchange the ayin with the aleph. Ar, right, that's what you do. I'm sorry, I just made a mistake. Instead of exchanging the hey with the aleph, you exchange the ayin with the aleph. The ayin and the aleph have the same pronunciation. As far as we're concerned, right? We don't say shma. We don't. Aleph and ayin in Chazal are often exchanged. They have the same sound. When you exchange the ayin for an aleph and you exchange the pay for a base, you have the letters arbe, not in order. The letters are not in order, but you have the four letters arbe. That's the drasha. Because when we mentioned this yesterday, what did we mention yesterday? Nowhere in the Torah did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu that the next Makkah is Arba. Only thing it says here in the Pasuk, this Makkah of Arba is unique among all the Makkahs, where all the Makkahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, came forth from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Dibur, what will be the next Makkah? Among the 10 Makkahs, the only one where Hashem never ever said, nowhere did Hashem ever say, that there will be a makkah called Arbe. Hashem says to Moshe, go into Paro and tell Paro that Ki ani hichbadti yaslibo v'yaslev avodav, and if you're going to refuse, and you're in trouble. Okay, all Hashem says, Ulman tesaper b'yaz nevincho v'nevincho eisasher hissalalti b'mitzran v'yas oisasher samti vam v'idatem ki ani Hashem. What happens? All Hashem says, go to Paro and tell Paro, I'm going to do something. It is I who have hardened your heart. And all of this for the purpose of putting my signs, also sai, amongst you, in order that your children should know, they should know, Uman to Sapir, that we should tell our children what Hashem, the Koyach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then what's the next pasuk? The next pasuk, Gimel, Vayavah Moshe of Yaron El Paro, Vayomer Lov, Koyama Hashem, Elokei Arim, Ad Mosa Meyanto, next pasuk, Ki Moyanto L'Shlecha Sami, Hinini, Mevi, Mochor, Arbe, Bigvulecha. Hashem never ever said what the next makkah will be. All of the other makkahs, it's explicit in the pasuk where Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, tomorrow you're going to bring this makkah. But when it comes to Arbe, Hashem never told him that this will be the next makkah. Hashem is giving Moshe Rabbeinu, it's your choice, your discretion. You decide what makkah you want to bring in order to punish Paro. Moshe on his own decided that the appropriate makkah in this case will be the makkah of Arbe. This is Moshe's contribution, private contribution towards the Aseres, the 10 makkahs. Now, some Mefarshim are a little bit disturbed with that. They don't like that. Well, that's too much of an extreme thing to say that Moshe Rabbeinu, you never heard this. They never taught this to you in kindergarten. And Moshe Rabbeinu was given the option, given the right to decide which makkah to bring. So they want to say there must be somewhere in the pasuk a hint, some illusion that the Ribbono Shel Olam himself told Moshe there's going to be the makkah called Arbe. And the only thing they can come up with is Bayomer Hashem Moshe, the bays and the aleph shall be inserted into the name of Paro. Paro has four letters, Pei, Resh, Ayin, Hei. In the rules of grammar, the rules of Drush, you are permitted to exchange certain letters. And one of the rules of Drush allows us to exchange an ayin for an aleph, and allows us to exchange a pei for a beis. So we make this exchange. We have the four letters, which when we rearrange the four letters are aleph, resh, beis, hei. Arbe, Hashem is hinting to Moshe, if you don't want to make the decision on your own, what is the correct makkah, I'll tell you what you should do. The hint is, bring upon them arbe locusts. Now, what happens? The Arbe, the Egyptians, they say, Ad Mosa Yezen Lodul Mokesh Shalach Esonoshim, how long are you going to be a stumbling block? And here, Moshe say, Paro calls him back. There's a lot going on in Arbe. Arbe is a very powerful makkah, and there's a lot of information about Arbe that's unique relative to all of the other makkahs. And that's because a lot of this has to do with two things. Number one, Moshe Rabbeinu now is becoming a gavra. Moshe Rabbeinu now, for the first time in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is actually doing things on his own. Until this point in time, Moshe Rabbeinu was just a puppet. Moshe Rabbeinu was just, the more we get to the end of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu develops, he matures, he becomes his own man. When Moshe starts out, Moshe refuses to go on the mission. Hashem has to force him. Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, you're going whether you like it or not. You're leaving Egypt. You're going to go to Mitzrayim and you're going to be the leader. I can't. Aaron's going to be insulted. This and that. Hashem says, I'm telling you, I'm not giving you a choice. You're going to do it. And Moshe goes. And whatever Hashem tells Moshe to say, he says. And then as the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim unfolds, Moshe Rabbeinu gets very comfortable. He gets very comfortable in his role as being the leader, and he starts doing things on his own. He takes over to a certain degree. He shows himself. This parasha, Parashas Bo, is a critical transition in the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. And one of those, and there are many different ideas, many different elements to the Makkah of Arbe, where Moshe Rabbeinu is showing who he is.
Right.
I'm not just a puppet of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem put me in this world to accomplish, to do something on my own. He's developing. here in his role. And what? Yeah.
But it's not completely random.
Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. Right. Of course not. Of course not.
It has to be something that's above ground, but not in the heavens, and so on. So there are certain limitations on this object here.
What the Lamude Nisan says to enhance what you just said is that after this, it says after he tells Paro, it says, by Ethan, by Esame, and Paro. In other words, Moshe was now in control and he had no respect for Paro anymore. He turned his back on Paro, which you don't do, but he felt comfortable to do it. He just turned his back and walked out.
So what does Rashi say over here in this pasuk? Okay, let's see over here. Let's see over here. It says it's possible. There's going to be Arbe. And Arbe. It comes upon Egypt. Arbe alkol eretz mitzrayim vayonach bechol givul mitzrayim kaved meoid. Okay, it does say. You see, Mr. Rappaport, you're trying to tell me that it was different. The pasuk says more than different. It says kaved. You have to define the word kaved. The simple translation of kaved means it was severe. Lefanav lo hoya chein arbe kamohu, v'acharav lo yihye chein. L'cha'ora, the end of the pasuk is coming to define the meaning of the word kaved. And the obvious question is, why is this called kaved when it was only 1 week, it was only one min, when in the time of Yoel, there were four? Rashi pasuk Yudalit, the achrav lo yihyekein the oisoi shehoya b'meyoyel shenemar boy kamolo nihye min ha'olam. It says in Perek Beis, it says they're the same exactly. There was no such thing in the world. Lamanu shoyu kaved mishal Moshe. It says there indeed it was more kaved than Moshe. The answer is. Minim harbe, many varieties. Shahayu yachad arba, there were four. Yelek chosil gozom, together with arbe. Arbe yelek chosil gozom. Avol shel Moshe lohaya ela shel min echad v'chamohu lohaya v'lo yiye. So what does that mean exactly? It doesn't really answer the question. It's very hard. It's really a struggle. What exactly this means? What does it mean exactly? The bottom line is, which one was more severe? Yo-yo. Isn't that what it says? So the answer is, they were both equally severe. They were both severe, uniquely kaved. One was from one min, and one was from four minim. So, but what does that mean exactly? I don't know.
Didn't we say that the one min only does certain things normally? So by Yoel, you had four minim and everything was destroyed. But by Moshe, if you had one min, and it was still destroyed everything, even though that wasn't his nature. So maybe that means that you could never have that. That's not the nature of that.
Okay. But obviously, the point I want to make is that this Rashi is controversial.
Right.
Because the Radak doesn't learn like this. And the Radak is a very good support, because the Radak quotes Psukim in Sefer Tehillim, where David fills in some of the details. And David says, there wasn't just one min in the time of Moshe and Yitzias in the Makos. There were three. Doesn't say in the Pasuk. Not everything that happened doesn't say in the Pasuk. David HaMelech and Sefer Tehillim records many things that happened that were not written in the Pasuk. And the Medrash here that we have this obscure Medrash we never heard of before, Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer, Parsha Yutes, makes a kal v'chomer. It cannot be that if Hashem already is going to bring upon Egyptians locusts, he's going to bring upon them something less than what he brought upon his own people. If Hashem brought upon Klal Yisrael four different types of minim, it has to be that he brought upon the Egyptians all four. So then how then do you answer the question? How then do you answer the question where it says that in Egypt Lohoya came, and then when it says by Moshe, it says Yoel, the same thing Lohoya? How do you explain? I don't have an answer. If you want to, I'll tell you a really strange answer. But I once heard something like this: is it was a different world after Matan Torah. It was a whole new world, just like after the Mabel. Can you compare anything that existed in the world before the time of the Mabel to what took place after the Mabel? And it says in the Pasuk, Lohoye Kain, There was no such thing, and there never will be such a thing. Yeah, in this world, until the end of the world, it comes a point in time when it's a new world. And when it's a new world, all of reality starts fresh again. The words of the pasuk are Lo hoye chein arbe kamo v'acharav lo yihye chein. Afterwards, there will never be such a thing in the existence of the world as they know it, as it was known. When it came to Har Sinai and Ribbono Nishlolim came down and it was Mashre Hishchin in Klal Yisrael, it's a new world. It's a whole new world. The world starts fresh. It's a new reality in this world that the Shekhinah is resting in this world. Just like we can appreciate that, and it's not far-fetched to say that when you want to discuss the world from before the Mabul to after the Mabul. Before the Mabul, people lived for hundreds of years, and after the Mabul, people lived not more than 70 years. And the understanding is that the world changed. The nature actually changed. There's a lot of science behind this of what exactly it says in the Medrash. It says the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought about the Mabul was he took out a star. There are two stars in Shemayim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he pulled those stars out of their orbit, which caused the rotation of the earth. It caused the rotation of the planets around the earth, the magnetic pull. The reason why the earth rotates in such a fashion is because of gravity. There's gravity, and all of the planets have a function. They enhance, they add to the way the world rotates on its axis, the way the planets rotate around the sun. And when there's a change, that causes major change in the climate and in the environment. And the world becomes a different type of world. I told you this once. I want to tell you this once. This person, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Price. So he explained to me. He told us Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was very fascinated with this idea, in that all of the calculations, the Chazal about time, appear to work with the assumption. It fits perfectly their calculations, the basic calculations, which I don't know anything about these numbers. If the earth would rotate around the sun in a perfect circle.
Not inclined.
It's an ellipse. The earth.
Also, it's tilted.
Right? Tilted. He didn't tell me about that. But he said the earth rotates around the sun in an ellipse. Why? It revolves around, it circulates around the sun in an ellipse. Why? Because of the gravity. There are planets, and as the earth rotates around the sun, it would really prefer to go in a perfect circle, but being that it's in the vicinity of certain planets, those planets have a pull. It pulls the earth towards them, and the result is the earth does not go around the sun in a perfect circle. It goes around the sun in an ellipse. But the calculations of Chazal work out perfectly if the earth would indeed go around the sun in a perfect circle. And we know that their calculations are off. There's a discrepancy between their calculations and the reality that NASA has presented us, which results in a lot of problems. In 200 years, Pesach will no longer be in Chodesh Ha'aviv. It's no longer going to be in the spring. There are problems because Chazal's calculations are off by a small amount, which adds up over the years. And he says, but if the earth would go around in a perfect circle, we would not be off. Everything would be perfect. Where then did something go wrong? So it's a Gemara. The Gemara says when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the Mabul, it was basically like what we would say today, global warming on steroids. How did it come about, global warming on steroids? Not because carbon emissions, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim, he caused an event where two stars, or maybe two planets, which were major players in keeping the earth on its rotation around the sun in a perfect circle. There has to be a balance among the planets with their gravitational pull as that it draws the earth, it keeps the earth in a perfect circle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took those two stars and removed them. He caused something to happen. Now there's something deficient in Shemayim, and when the earth circles around the sun, and the gravitational pull is not there, it's being skewed. It's not traveling anymore in a perfect circle. It's traveling in an ellipse. Yeah, whatever. I don't know all the details. And that's what caused the earth no longer to go in a perfect circle, but instead goes in the ellipse. And that's why the calculations of Chazal are off. That we know as a fact in science has a major effect on the environment. It causes rain, it causes storms, it causes violent seasons, it causes a lot of strange things happen. And one of the things that happens is that the purity of the earth is no longer the same. And thus, people cannot possibly live. The environment does not allow a person to be in an environment which is pristine to one's health, and a person is not going to be able to live more than 70 years. Whereas until that point in time, being that the earth was perfectly functioning the way it was meant to be, the environment was enhanced that much more, and the environment allowed man to live for 1,000 years. It's a different world. After the Mabul, it's a new world. Same thing. This Matan Torah. We don't appreciate. With Matan Torah, the world is a different world. The whole world is different. So when it says here, there was not like this before, and there never will be something like this, possibly. This is a Jewish. It's not mine. I remember hearing about this, that it answers a lot of questions, this idea, about you find different things that it says, different
nature
ideas.
Not necessarily nature.
You don't have to come on. You don't have to come on to nature. You have to come on. You come on to a calculation of time. When the pasuk says there was never anything like this, and nothing like this will ever be, he was speaking over here to this time period leading up to Matan Torah. When Matan Torah arrives, that's it. We restart. We reset the clock. So if you'll find in the time of Yoel, it says in Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis, there was never something so severe like this in the world. What do you mean? In the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, there was. That's a different world. What are you comparing? You're comparing one world. You're comparing Mars to Venus. Men are from Mars. Women are from Venus. There's no comparison between the two. How can you compare what happened before Matan after Matan Torah? It's a whole different calculation of time. It's a chiddush. To say such a thing is a very, very big chiddush, but it does answer the question to some degree, because Rashi struggles with this, and this Medrash clearly seems to say not like Rashi, and that makes the question even greater. It's a very big issue, which has to be understood. Yeah.
Yeah, psychologically, for me, it's not happening, because if you look at the Pesukim, it says, it covered the whole land in the 7 days, ate the fruits, ate grass, everything was
destroyed.
So it must be different kind of locusts. The one which ate grass.
Arbe is Arbe.
Wow. But then let's go to Yoel. It was in 4 years.
The
first year came in the which ate plants.
The Gozam.
The trees remained. The next year came something else, which ate something else. The trees and the grass.
Okay, that's the question. That's the struggle.
So now, psychologically, what is worse? Everything destroyed in one time, or when you had grass, when you didn't have grass, you had trees. When you didn't have trees, you had grass, and so on. So this line would be the possible, like never was before. That makes sense.
Okay, you can look at it in many different angles. The questions are greater than the answers. There are many different angles to it, and everyone is obviously struggling with this issue, how to understand the difference between what it says in the Yetzias Mitzrayim and what it says here. I hear.
There's another question.
Yeah.
Why is Paris name associated more so with Arbe than with any other marker?
What do you mean?
Why was it Arbe that was to be in
Paris
name?
Why did Moshe select Arabic?
What is
unique? Paris
name includes Arabic. Question: why is that so?
Okay, I don't know the answer. One idea that definitely that's really comes out, leaps off the page about Arabic, the uniqueness of Arabic, is emphasis to Gvul Mitzrayim. Okay? It says the word Gvul Mitzrayim multiple times. It does not ever say the word Gvul Mitzrayim. Is not discussed in any of the other makas. It says by the end, even the last, by Yisa Eso Arbe, by Yistokeu Biyom Osof, by Nishar Arbe Echad B'chol Gvul Mitzrayim. And when it came down originally, what does it say? It says when the Arbe descended upon the earth, by Yisrael Moshe Tehis Yotchal Arbe Mitzrayim Be Arbe, by Yomer Hashem El Moshe. Hashem now says Arbe, but Moshe said it first. Okay, Moshe said it first. After Moshe told Paro, Arbe is coming, now Hashem says, okay, go bring the Arbe. All the other makas, Hashem said the makas before Moshe ever said anything. So it's not a kasha. This pause is not a kasha. V'yemashal Moshe nitiyot chal Eretz Mitzrayim bo'arbeh v'yal al Eretz Mitzrayim. Not just Eretz Mitzrayim. It goes on to say v'yed Moshe es Mateu v'ashem niyaguach kodim v'yal ha'arbeh al Eretz al kol Eretz Mitzrayim v'yonach b'chol gvul Mitzrayim. Two dinim. Al kol Eretz Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Eretz Mitzrayim is the gvulos. And nochamo v'yonach b'chol gvul Mitzrayim.
Is it by
Orav
also?
Orav? I don't think it says by Orav the word. It says by Orav. It says the gvul. That's the Orav. Doesn't say by Dam for sure not. Doesn't say the gvul. It says al Eretz Mitzrayim. It doesn't say gvulos. The gvul is there's a whole new dimension to the makeh called the gvul. A boundary. What is all that about? What's the din of a gvul? We don't have this concept of a gvul only by the maka of Arbet. What's the orav?
It's a nes in itself.
But what's the difference between the eretz and the gvul? Here is the orav. Orav is v'yimashal mosh hashkim abayke v'yisyasi lufnei paro. V'flesi bayoy mahu es eretz goyshen. Es ha'aroi v'molu botei mitzrayim es ha'aroi v'gam ho adomo asher him oleha. The homes and the land, the samti fidus, doesn't say anywhere. It doesn't say the word gvul.
The drush that he's probably thinking in his mind, he says, v'yosai ha'aro miparo me'avodobu me'amo, it makes a point of saying that happened. They equally suffered. Paro, his servants in the palace, and all the people in the land.
Maybe the Jews, too.
No, only up to the Kenan that happened.
There's a new dimension called the Gvul. That is what is unique to Arbe. So here when we discuss Arbe, when history is repeating itself, not against the Egyptians, but it's coming to bring suffering upon Klal Yisrael, you have to suggest that when the Arbe, it's coming to the time of Yoel is, on the punishment represents the Gvul, the boundaries. Now here is the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, but it has to also allude to something deeper, which maybe we'll come across as we go through the psukim. Okay, enough said on this. Let's now go to. I forgot. I'll look a little on because I think it's too long.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little on.
Let's go to the Mincha Gedolah. Let's see the Mincha Gedolah. On page 213, the Mincha Gedolah. Amuzal Shahaya. Who is? I'm sorry. Pasuk Beis. Jump down to Pasuk Beis. Page 213. Pasuk Beis. Shimuzos Hazakeinim. The al de koch the hazinu kol yoshe haaretzki kasher anshe haaretz roim shein hazakenim shehem menahigi hador the ene ho edo enam shalom the enam samim levu divrei hanavi gam hamoinei am oimdim birish osam. Unbelievable. According to the mincha gedola, he is addressing specifically the leaders. The people, they take their cue from the leaders. If the leaders do not do
opinion leaders.
If the leaders do not do tshuva, there's no way in the world the common man is going to do tshuva. And therefore, that is why Yoel, in his opening address, his opening nevuah, he speaks to Hazikainim. Does it say the same thing with regard to the other prophets? I don't know. I don't think so. Not that I remember. Does Yeshaya and Yecheskel, is he speaking specifically, does he start off talking to the Zikanim? No. He speaks specifically to the Zikanim first. Because if they're not going to do Teshuvah, what can you possibly expect from the common man? Mash Einkein ima Zikanim, the Zikanim oisim Teshuvah, gam anshe hador oisim komoyim ki akol hoylech asa roish. All depends on the leader. Another interpretation. The same idea. It's your responsibility to help me. You have to go and enact hakonis. Like Moshe says, V'asimein b'roshechem, k'moy shal muzal, sh'not al kodosh baruch hu ha'inish na'om v'nosno al ha'roshim, ki alein mutal lo'achich v'hadruch. The same idea as the first idea. It's their responsibility. It's not just a matter of the people will imitate the leaders. More than that, the leaders have the power and they have the influence to make sure the people follow the Ritzoyin Hashem. And if they do not do so, they are the ones that will suffer the brunt of Hashem's punishment. Umareinu harav Rabbi Moshe Alsheikh, okay, the famous Alsheikh, Kosav, Sheyadua Sheshmiya Meirachoik Vohazanemekav Drush. There are two words, Hazinu Hashamayim Va'adavera V'sishma Ha'oretz Imreifi. Why did Moshe say the word Hazinu in reference to the Shemayim? Because the Shemayim is far away. And when it comes to the Oretz Nosan Livnei Adam, the Oretz is nearby. So V'zeh, and with this, so therefore, when it comes to the Zikanim, you just need to say the word Shimu. It's they get it. It's easy. It's the word Shemia relative to the word Hazana means it's near, it's close. When you whisper into someone's ear, that the person is listening, Shemia, because he hears the sound waves nearby. When the person is on the other end of the room and he has to carefully concentrate to listen, that is called hazana, hearken. You have to listen carefully because you're at a distance. So a zaken, when you tell a zaken musar, you tell a zaken about a problem, they very quickly understand. Because they've been through life, they have life experience. So they know all about it. You're right, you just tell them a few words. But a youngster who has no life experience, they don't believe you. You're saying nonsense. What are you telling us these things for? They have a hard time listening because they do not relate to the subject matter. That's why there's a difference over here, according to the Mincha Gedolah, the difference between the word Hazana for the Zekanim and the word Shmiya for the Zekanim, the word Hazana for the youngsters. Because the Zekanim are well aware, they know good and well what Arba is all about. They can relate to the subject matter, and they indeed can acknowledge that the Arba that they're dealing with currently is far worse than anything else that ever existed. Ach hamoin habachurim, the multitude of the young people, asher min astam loy rohu liyos hadavar chodosh, they don't know that this is a novelty in the world. They think if there's arbe today, masha hoya kvar hoya. So 25 years ago, there was also arbe. 50 years ago, there was also, it's a cycle. It's a cycle in the world. The arbe make their way through the world. Umatmiya, and they don't trust you. They are in shock. They question if what you are saying is correct. Therefore, the appropriate word that has to be used to express the difficulty that the youngsters have in paying attention and understanding what is being presented to them is the word hazana. Ya tu oznam be'etzem v'yiskarvu l'shma yoser mehazakenim. Okay, that's what he says over here. We'll leave the rest out. Okay, let's now... Okay, we'll just read over here. Let's go jump down a few lines. Three lines down, where it says in the bold letters at the end of the line, Yeser ha-gozomach al harbeh. This is the same, addressing the same issue that we said before. Shol yakam b'minim harbeh, v'zeh lo hoya b'mitzrayim. K'moshe tirtzu zal, he's quoting Rashi, al-moshe amah b'mitzrayim, l'fonav lo hoya kein harbeh, k'mo v'yachv lo yakein, shasham hoya min echad v'kan minim harbeh. V'yoydev shaloy mar masha amar, l'fonav lo hoya yakein, he's a very simple answer. Okay, the answer is too simple that when it says in the Pasuk, Lohoye Kane, it means only in Egypt. Someone actually said this yesterday. Someone suggested this yesterday. Barbanel says. Very simple. When it says in Egypt, Lohoye Kane, Vloye Kamohu, it means only in Egypt. But indeed, there would be such a severe makkah. It's even worse in other parts of the world, where even Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that is a very simple translation of the words.
Oh. He says that normally, when the Arabic came to the point, what was the godless? The cold wall, that's right. That normally, when you have the Arabic say, oh, this is the border, we can't go further, we don't affect other countries.
Yeah.
So it says, the cold wall, that's right. They literally went till the edges. That was the godless of that one,
right.
Was that it went that just to the border and stopped.
Right.
Normally, they would just, you know, you get the little bits going to another land. It doesn't stop. They say, oh, we can't cross the border.
Yes.
If the one from Yoel was in other countries too, you said you weren't sure. You didn't know.
Right. So you see, the Malbim says, the Abarbanel says he makes that distinction. It's not a chazal. It's a suggestion. Right. The Abarbanel is saying that answer, you don't need to come on to Rashi. Rashi, obviously, the difficulties with Rashi. It's very difficult. What does Rashi exactly mean? So he's saying an answer that when it says exactly that dealing with Egypt, in Egypt there never was and there never will be. But that's limited to Egypt. But there will indeed, there's a possibility will exist that there can be even a more severe form of Arabic in other parts of the world. Simplest, that's the Abarbanel. That is the nature, that is the hallmark of the Abarbanel. He takes the Pasuk literally. He takes the Pasuk, what?
Well, he's a logic.
He reads the words pshuto kimashmoy. And Rashi usually, for some reason, Rashi does not always do that. The Rashbam also has that technique. Rashbam is similar in a certain respect. Rashi's grandson to the Abarbanel, he reads the psukim very literally. Very literally, and it makes a lot of sense. So the question, Rashi didn't know that. So why didn't Rashi was brilliant. Rashi knew all of these answers. And yet Rashi chose not to use that explanation in his primary parish. On Pshat and the Pasuk. Why not? Obviously, Rashi knew something that we don't know. Rashi saw the big picture, and Rashi appreciated that there's a difficulty with the parish of the Abarbanel. And there were difficulties in the parish of his grandson, would say, the Rashbam, and therefore Rashi felt that the Pshat is something which may not satisfy you to translate the word literally, but it's the better interpretation of the pasuk because it avoids most of the difficulties. What are the difficulties? Unfortunately, we don't always know. Rashi didn't tell us all the difficulties. Okay, let's go further. And now one more little point. Now, a lot of the stuff of the Chaim HaSanach is a Kabbalah, so we're not going to do. But I just want to point out one little thing. This is one teeny little thing. Is last words of the Chaim HaSanach on Pasuk on page 215. On page 215, right before Pasuk Hey, just one last words. Gam Arbe Gimatria Reishches Kimispar Yitzchak Remez Lemidas Hadin. Okay, so Arbe, he opens up an idea that Arbe alludes to a concept of Midas Hadin, harshness. Whatever that is, the rest of it is all Kabbalah, and I have no idea what he's saying, so we'll leave it out. Let's now go to the next Pasuk Hey. Harsh words. Hakitsu shikoyrim uvichu. Wake up, you drunkards. That's a very nasty thing to say to people, to tell a person you're a shikor, okay, that you're intoxicated. You're intoxicated means that you have no das. A person who is intoxicated, what is the nature of it, of a person who's drunk? He lacks intelligence. He's telling Klal Yisrael, Shaitim, you have no intelligence. Wake up. It's also an insulting word. To say to a person to wake up, it means you're asleep. Uvichu, cry. Veheilu kol shoisei yayin. And wail. It's another word for crying, to wail. All those who drink wine. Al osis. Osis means it's a certain type of wine which is it's also wine. They're different. It's another word for wine.
He calls it strong wine.
Strong wine. Kinichras mipichem, because the wine will be cut off. Because kinichras mipichem will be cut off from your mouth. Food. Because you're not going to have wine anymore. Not food. Wine. The people who indulge in Geffen are going to cry because the Arbe will destroy the vines. Let's go to another pasuk. Ki goy ola al artsi, a nation is going to rise up upon my land. Otsum ve'ein mispar, a mighty nation, and there is no number. Now, the problem over here is we discussed this in the beginning of the Mordechai. In the beginning, when did Yoel live? He's the only one in the art scroll that appears twice in the chart. Two Yoels. because we do not know exactly when Yoel lived. All of the Treyasar, he is the most mysterious. He is the most obscure. Did he live during the time of the Aseres HaShvatim, or did he live at the tail end with Chavakuk at the very, very end during the time of Menashe? So when it says here that a nation is going to come up against my land, he's referring to which nation? If he's learning during the time of the end, during Menashe, King Menashe, when there was no longer Aseres HaShvatim, that means the nation refers to who? Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar. But if you learn he's the Yoel really lived during the time of the Aseres HaShvatim, then he's referring to Sancheriv. Sancheriv will come up and will exile the Aseres on page 915. If you look on page 915, you see Yoel appears twice. Either he appears in the year 3040, during the time of his main function was during the time of Achav, the children Yehoram ben Achav, that's who he was speaking to. Or he's referring to Yoel, is the only one that appears possibly there. There's a number next to him. He's later on, and he appears during the time of Nachum and Chavakuk, towards the end during Menashe, and then he would be referring to Nebuchadnezzar. So there's a nation, Allah al-Arzi, Otsum, he's mighty, the Ein Mispar, there is no number to his soldiers. Shinov Shinei Aryeh, his teeth are like the teeth of a lion. Ume Salois, Lovilo, the Salois are the molars. Heim Hashinayim Hagasois, the molars, the big teeth, they are, a lavi is also a lion. A lavi is another word for a lion, this poetic repetition, lo, and this massive creature is going to come and destroy the land. Let's see the Mepharish and Pasuk. We'll put two Pasuk together. Pasuk and Pasuk, we'll put it. Hakit Sushi Koidim, Atem Horogilu B'yayin Hasayru Min Hasheina. Wake up from your sleep. Ubichu and cry. Al Osis Bavur He Osis. Because the Osis, the aged wine, I think they normally translate the word Osis as aged wine, strong wine. Asher Nichras Mipichem Ki Ha'arbe Achal HaGafanim Miyato Lo Tzimsenu HaYayin. The Arbe has consumed the vines and there's nothing for you to drink. You're an addict. You're addicted to yayin, and now, guess what? There's no yayin to be found. You're going to go into withdrawal, and it's going to be very painful for you. Pasuk vav ki goy al ha'arbel yoyimar b'loshem she'ela. V'chein. Now, he's saying over here, Mitzudos is learning the pasuk. He's taking the pasuk out of, he's not taking the word literally, the different perushim, what the goy means. I told you it means nations, a nation. But he's coming to tell us that the arbe is a reference to, is the goy. And it's not so far-fetched, as we learned before, that these four creatures refer also to the Arba Golios. But here, the Mitzudos stuff, it says the Goy here is a code word for the Arba. Yoimar B'Lashoyin Sheila. It's a borrowed term. Sheila means borrowed. We're substituting the word Goy for Arba. V'chein Shifanim Am Loy Otsum. Shifanim in that pasuk, I don't know what that pasuk means. Shif.
It means
he translated
it badgers.
Badgers?
Yeah. That's
Shifanim. Okay. It's a substitute.
The point is, he calls it a nation.
A nation. We call it an am. Shifanim, it's an am, a nation. The word Shifanim is not a nation. It's something else. It's a borrow. We just substitute just to bring out the point. Shinov, Shinei Aryeh, Omar Dech Guzma Vehaflogavu, Inyan Militza. It's an expression. The teeth of these locusts are massive like lions. And they're going to consume all of your produce. This is the parish of the Mitzudos. We are focusing on the Arbe, and we're calling the Arbe, we're comparing it to a mighty nation, and we're comparing its teeth to a lion, and we're comparing its molars to a lavi, is also one another name for a lion. Let's see Rashi. Rashi Pasuk Hey says, Osis is Yayin Hatoiv, good wine. Pasuk Vav, Goy Olo Alarzi, Hagoivai Hazeh, Kinohu Kitzvo Goyim. The Goivai is the name for the locust. Over here is saying the same idea that we said in the Mitzudos. He's comparing it. It's a substitute for, it's a metaphor for the locust. Umisal ois, the molars, heim hashinayim hagasin shaloi es, which you chew with. You chew with these teeth. Let's see the Radak.
Yeah.
Aha. You want to say goy, but he does say it's a kinochu. He says a kinu. It's a play on the word. It's a play on the words. So let's do a little quick, a little bit more. Pasuk in the Radak. Hakitzu shikoidim. Oysam haragilim lehishtaker b'yayin ato hakitzu mishinaschem. Wake up. Uvichun cry. Yoimam v'layla kiloy simsu yayin. You're not going to find one ki ha'arbe yoichal ho'anavim. Osis hayayin nikur osis v'chein kol mashka shiotzim al-yidei kisisa udricha. Any wine that is produced by crushing the grapes. The reason why we call yayin with the word osis, because the word osis literally means to crush. When the wine is produced, wine is typically produced through an act of crushing. You crush the grapes. You step on the grapes. Therefore, nikra kein min va'asoisem rishaim, the wicked, the people who crush you are wicked. The yoinasam tirgem osis chamar mires, bitter wine. Okay, mar means, so he says bitter. Bitter is not necessarily mean, okay, very, very intoxicating. It's a different, whatever it means a bitter type of wine. Pasuk vav in the Radaki, goy kol kibbutz minachai yikore goy. Now he is telling us over here that it's not a borrowed term. Very interesting deek in the Radak. According to the Mitzudos, and according to Rashi, the Mitzudos said it's in Lashoin She'ela. It's a very common expression. A borrowed term. A borrowed expression. It's not to be translated literally. We take a word, we borrow it, and we use it for our purposes. It's a metaphor. Rashi says something very similar, but he has different vocabulary. A kinui, a nickname. A nickname. It's the same idea, Lashon She'ela. Radak says, no, I disagree. This is the literal translation of the word goy. What is a goy? It is a collection of living creatures. We typically use the word goy in reference to human beings, because human beings are living creatures. But guess what? We share the planet with animals, with other living creatures who do not have our same degree of intelligence. And what are they? Locusts. Locusts are also living creatures which come together in a unit. And that, in fact, is what is the unique nature of Arbe. See, this is where you're coming back to Moshe Rabbeinu. See, in the parasha, this is really when we're touching upon some very interesting ideas. Moshe, the first time Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, Binoreinu uvizkeinenu neleich, was where? By Arbe. Arbe was the first time when he tells Paro, we're going out, he says...
He's telling, he's dictating the terms.
Who's going? Your children can go. Okay, it's not here then. I'm in the wrong place. Aha, you see, that's why. Okay, I'm reading the wrong maka, that's why. Okay? Vayom Ravdi Faro, Vayushav. L'chu ivdu es Hashem Elokeichem. Mi v'mi haholechem. Vayoy me Moshe. The famous pasuk. Binoreinu uvizkeinenu neleich. Bivoneinu uvivnoiseinu. Bitzoneinu vivkir neleich. Yichag Hashem lanu. The Am is going. We're not going out as individuals. This is a very important point. When Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, so what would you say? We're slaves. We want freedom. So when they leave Egypt, where are you going to go? We're not going to be a new nation. I'm going to go to America. He's going to go to Europe. He's going to go to Poland. He's going to go to Australia. We want freedom. When people break out of prison, they don't become their own nation. You have a prison, a super max prison. You have a collection of Mishnagoyim all locked up, and they get out of prison. Where do they all go? If the prison walls fall down, everyone goes their own way. Moshe told Paro something unique which shook him up. We're not going to leave Egypt as individuals. We're going to leave Egypt as a nation. Do we appreciate what that means? This is unique. This is a very unique. That shook up Paro. What?
So you're saying this is a mita connected
mita. Oh, exactly. Arbe in this pasuk is called a goy. What's a goy? So everyone is apologizing. It doesn't mean a guy. Don't get carried away. It's a borrow term. It's a borrow term. It's a kinoi. It's like a big, we're discussing metaphors, drush. No, this is the literal translation of a nation, a collection of individuals joined together for a purpose, for a tachlis. When Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to present Paro, we're leaving here until this point in time. Paro was under the impression the Jews are slaves. It's true, they have an Avraham and Yitz, they all come from one forefather, but it's a modern world today. It's a new world today. Everyone wants an opportunity to be his own man, to make something out of himself, and you don't care about your fellow friend. We want out of Egypt, we want freedom, and when we get out of Egypt, we'll conquer the world and make out of us 50 nations. No Paro. The first time there was a revelation that when we're leaving Egypt, we're leaving as a unit, as a nation. We're all going to be together as the Am HaNifchar. That's a Chiddush. So what's the Makkah that's going to show Paro that this indeed is going to be so? From all of the various creatures in the world, which one operates as a unit and is loyal to one another, even more than bees?
Yes.
It's Arbe. Arbe. Arbe, they've done studies on this, is that it's just awesome how they come together. This Achdus amongst locusts, like none others, like no other creature in this world, do they operate as one unit. Hundreds of thousands, millions of them. They come, they land, they rest, and then when they want to go, they all go together, and they stop here, and they go together. That's Arbe. It's a nation. And we are now revealing to Paro, Klal Yisrael binoreinu uvizkoneinu neilech bivoneinu uvivnoiseinu. That's why Moshe was clever. And Moshe said to Paro, Arbe, that's going to be the lesson to teach you what Klal Yisrael is all about. And where do you learn that from? One little radak. One little radak here in Sefer Yoel. It says the word goy. And the Radak rejects the Mitzudos and Rashi and tells you what a goy is. And now it opens up a massive vista to understand what's happening in Parshas Bo, why Moshe selected Arbe, and why he said the words Binareinu Vizkeneinu, and it changes the whole nature of Tzias Mitzrayim. There's a big break. All the Parshim is, why are the Makos of Arbe in a different Parsha? Shouldn't Arbe be part of Parshas Shemos? In Parshas Shemos you have seven. Why stop there? Keep on going. Another two Makos. Makos Bechoros, okay, I understand, we'll put in a separate Parsha. Makos Bechoros, I grant you the right to put in your own Parsha. But come on, what's doing over here with these last two Makos over here? We have to separate. There's a shift in the formation of Klal Yisrael. And you learn that from one little teeny radak over here that says, Ki kol kibbutz menachai yikore goy. Lefichach omar al ha'arbe goy. V'chein omar al ha'namolim. Am loy os. The proof that you say such a concept, even ants. Ants are also called a nation. It's also called an am.
Without a king.
It's an am. The al hashapanim. Okay, hashapanim is something of a creature.
It's beans.
It's beans? It has to be a living. It has to be a living creature.
There's a statement that they don't have a king, but they
yeah, that's an ant. Okay, so that's a nation that's missing something. The al hashifanim. Hashifanim is a creature. I don't know what it is. It's some type
it's
of
a
living creature. It has to be a chay. Am loyotzum. Okay, let's finish up. Shinav loyotzum. That shinav loyotzum. Aryeh ki ilu yesh leishinam ki kishine aryeh. The teeth of an aryeh. Umisal ois lavi lamoi. The molars. The halavi is godol min ha'arye, seven names to a lion. The lavi represents the oldest, an older lion.
It's still called a young lion, though, in most translations.
Okay, it's just because you're 75 years old, you're still a youngster. The lavi, the yoinis on ter game is shinaihi, shinei ar yavon, univoi, the molars. Kivar, you're right. See, he disagrees. He says Kivar, are you a baby lion? The Targum says a lavi is a baby lion.
Yes.
The Radak says a lavi is godol min ha'aryeh. There appears to be a difference of opinion.
Right.
There appears to be a difference of opinion between the Radak and the Targum and the Farshim. V'hinei Nemar, it says, Uvinei Lavi, the proof is, Uvinei Lavi, Yisparadu, it says, Uvinei. It used the word Uvinei in reference to a Lavi, Yisparadu, Niriki lo Nikra Akotan Lavi. Now that's why he disagrees. Since it says there are younger ones, Uvinei, that they shows to show that a Lavi is the adult. All right, whatever it is. Okay, whatever it is. Okay, whatever it is. So we did the Radak. We opened up a whole new understanding of what's going on. And tomorrow we'll continue with the Malbim.